Hey there, everybody, and let me be the first. Okay, probably not the first. Who am I kidding? But maybe in the top half of the list of people to wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy Holiday Season from Not Your Mother's Goose. I'm Topher Goggin, and coming up today, we've got a slam-packed final episode of 2022. Of course, we'll kick off the Christmas season with the Grinch, but we'll also check the news, learn some manners with Maui, consult our medical staff on what to do if you swallow a fly, and work on our moves by inventorying some historical dance crazes. Because why not? That is not all, though. Today is the kickoff of our long-awaited Tournament of Disney Dining. Your 32 favorite Disney restaurants are ready to battle, and it's time for you to help us pick the number one Disney dining destination. Stay tuned, I'll tell you all about the field and how to vote a little bit later in the show. For now, though, somebody find Thurl Ravenscroft and a 39.5-foot pole. We're headed to Whoville to check in on the Grinch. How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Christmas is right around the corner, and it's never too early to start speculating about what's going to ruin this year's holiday. Will Aunt Betty get sauced on the punch and end up face down in the sauce, leading to a quick study of cranberry removal techniques? Will your relatives give you the thoughtful gift of acne treatment? Again. Will a green thing burglarize your house and toss all your personal property off a mountainside? Everything is in play. In the town of Whoville, the residents, perhaps including Horton, find themselves terrorized by a Grinch. As for what a Grinch is, best I can do for you is speculate that the Cat in the Hat retired, put on about 40 pounds, and ate enough green eggs and ham that he turned puce. Okay, actually, I mean chartreuse when I'm talking vomit green, I know. Puce is like burgundy, but it shouldn't be. Puce is one letter away from puke. That should be the disgusting yellowish-green color. Crayola, get with the program. Anyhow, the Grinch lives up in the mountains above Whoville, spending all day stewing about how much he hates Christmas. We don't know why. Maybe somebody got him the acne regimen. But this is a problem, since the Whos love Christmas. I actually have a little sympathy for the Grinch here. The Whos are basically that neighbor with the 8-foot-tall candy cane in their yard in July. And there's also a lot of singing. I'd understand it if the Grinch decided to steer clear of the target of Whoville on Black Friday. Eventually, the Grinch decides he's had enough. In the reverse of the kindergarten rule that you can't bring cupcakes unless you bring enough for the whole class, he decides that if he's going to have a crappy Christmas, he'll make sure the other Whos do too. I wonder if Abbott and Costello ever tried the Who's on First routine in Whoville. I bet it would kill there. Officially, the mission statement at Grinch LLC is to, quote, stop Christmas from coming. That seems to me like it would best be accomplished with some sort of daylight saving time on steroids. Unfortunately, the Grinch holds a few too many strategic planning sessions, and mission creep being what it is, instead lands on a plan to hold a mass crime spree instead. He's probably one of those folks who argues that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. But, rather than grab some hostages at Nakatomi Plaza, the Grinch decides to grab himself some Christmas presents. And trees. And other random crap from people's houses. While so far in the story, the Grinch seems to have been wearing the Emperor's new clothes, he also decides that a heist like this requires a costume. He sews up his own red suit, creating a Santa effect roughly as effective as if you go to the mall on about October 25th and find Santa sporting a goatee and arriving on a moped. After strapping a fake antler on Max the reindeer, they head off on his sleigh. Sleigh is kind of an interesting thing for a Christmas hater to have sitting around in the garage, but regardless, they're off to unsantify Whoville one house at a time. The Grinch unloads bag after bag of stuff from the Whos, while Tony the Tiger sings a song, and Max wonders if they serve Alpo in prison. One Who does wander in on the heist, but maybe don't book Cindy Lou for any solo shifts on your neighborhood watch. Grinchy then takes his haul to the top of the local cliff and prepares to shove the trash bags off a la Arlo Guthrie, Alice's Restaurant style. Alas, before Officer Obi shows up to file the littering complaint, the Grinch's plan is interrupted by a sing-along. The Whos are unfazed by the serial ransacking of their homes and care more about having a Yuletide flash mob in the town square. These folks are delusional. Perhaps dehusional is the term I'm looking for. Hearing the music, The confused Grinch suddenly worries that he might be on a new TV show combining Candid Camera with Beat Shazam. He decides the best plan is to not dump all the Who's crap off the mountain, just in case the cameras are rolling. It also turns out that mountainside gift hauling is good cardio, as our narrator reports substantial growth in the Grinch's heart size, which I personally hope is followed by a new workout video starring the Grinch in some Richard Simmons shorts. The Who's get restitution and a roast beast dinner. Max the dog, for some reason, keeps wearing a stick on his head, and the Grinch heads to Hollywood. Maybe it's time for Die Hard to get another sequel. We get to make one last check of the news before the end of the year, starting with a reminder to watch out for romance scams around the holidays. Let's see what we've got. Dumbo gets catfished by animatronic Jungle Cruise elephant. Make-A-Wish Foundation hits new records after adding Genie to staff. And it was just on the last show that we took a good look at Super Mario Brothers, and now they're in the holiday headlines. Mushroom Christmas postponed as Santa gets stuck in Mario's chimney. Luigi won't be unwrapping any new overalls for Christmas just yet, as the Mushroom Kingdom celebration is indefinitely on hold until Santa can get unstuck from Mario's chimney. In a scene reminiscent of Winnie the Pooh visiting Rabbit's house, Santa stopped by Mario's with a gift delivery early on Christmas Eve, but rather than encountering a plate of milk and cookies, Saint Nick instead arrived to find a plate of delicious-looking mushrooms. Helping himself to a bite on his way up the chimney, Santa suddenly inflated to twice his normal size and found himself lodged in the flue. Mario and Toad are currently on scene attempting to devise a solution, with proposals so far ranging from using the jaws of life to seeing if Big Santa can now break the fireplace bricks with his head. For now, however, a more patient plan is in place, as Santa will wait for a Koopa Troopa or Goomba to wander by and shrink him back to his original size. Reached for comment via a really long boom microphone, Santa noted that he was actually enjoying the break from the Christmas Eve grind and asked if Mario could put out a flower next year because he and Rudolph could really wreak some havoc shooting fireballs off the roofs of people's houses. Christmas is just days away, which means that your kiddos are probably trying to be on their best behavior in the manners department. But how will they know what constitutes good etiquette these days? They need a teacher. They need Maui.
Manners are important. Everyone knows that. Whether you're raising a 5-year-old or just trying not to slap the guy in front of you using a coupon at the DMV. Sure, you could try one of those fancy etiquette classes, but you'll never make it to the part where Miss Manners teaches your 4-year-old which salad fork to stick up their nose first. What you need is a politeness package from an instructor that packs a punch. And I've got just the demigod for you. Introducing Maui on Manners. Straight from the world of Moana, Maui is here to teach you everything you need to know in literally just one lesson. You're welcome. No, that's not me saying you're welcome. That's the lesson. You're welcome. Why order with a please when you're about to put money in their till? I'd like an Egg McMuffin and a coffee. You're welcome. And no more saying excuse me when you push someone to get that last box of Fruit Loops. After all, you're doing them a favor by eating that extra sugar yourself. And don't forget to send out those You're Welcome cards right after Christmas for providing your friends an outlet for their terrible gifts. From job interviews to funerals, Maui shows you situation after situation where You're Welcome is the only answer. Try Maui on Manners today. Operators are standing by. Call today and they'll politely tell you, well, you're welcome.
Back here on Not Your Mother's Goose, that was the voice of Adam Vibber, the brains behind our new Tournament of Disney Dining that's coming up in just a few minutes. Before we can do that, though, we need to get back to the rest of the news, starting with two stories from our Sequels and Follow-Ups Bureau. Disney Plus to release new bird-brained follow-up, Finding Emu. Miserly ABC execs ordered the Three Scrooges spinoff. And while this is the best time of year, it looks like one fairy tale celeb is not having such a great day. Robin Hood indicted for tax fraud. Famed philanthropist Robin Hood may soon have to access his TurboTax account from a jail cell following his indictment yesterday on 11 counts of tax fraud. The legal action followed a 3-year audit of the Foxy Humanitarian's returns, which revealed disputed figures and numerous questionable deductions. According to IRS spokesman J.D. Cheesewizzle, there was plenty of robbing of the rich going on in Robin Hood's business model, but not so much giving to the poor. Cheesewizzle commented, Mr. Hood appears to have set up a series of sham charities to funnel funds directly to his friends. We're primarily focused on donations sent through his opaque Make Merrier Men Foundation, which has never been approved for 501c3 status. We're also concerned about a number of fundraising trips Maid Marian has taken to the French Riviera, and we're pretty sure Robin paid for Friar Tuck to get hair implants. Hood was booked and released by the Sheriff of Nottingham yesterday morning, departing immediately for a meeting with Atlanta-based attorney Ben Matlock. Sensing the PR machine already shifting into gear, observers noted that Little John picked Robin up in a borrowed 2003 Ford Taurus rather than his normal red Maserati Spider. All right, the time is finally here. We are ready to kick off the Tournament of Disney Dining. As I mentioned back during the news, while I had always planned to do one more Disney tournament as a follow-up to our tournaments of villains, rides, and sidekicks, it was our friend Adam Vibber who came up with the suggestion to make Disney restaurants the subject. I personally am really excited for this because I have no idea where this is going to land. Disney dining fans have a lot of different opinions. I'm not sure who the winners are going to be. Before we begin, though, I want to give a shout-out to the late college football coach Mike Leach. He died following a heart attack last week. It was his press conference answer analyzing with faux seriousness what would happen in a battle of the Pac-12 mascots, which one would win in a fight. That's what inspired the original Tournament of Villains and got this whole thing going. He was one of a kind in terms of a personality, so I just wanted to mention that before we got started. Back on the subject of restaurants, voting will open this week for our first round of matches, which will take place in the parks and quick service divisions. I will tell you the seeds and the matchups in just a second. What you need to know is that you can go to notyourmothersgoose.com right now and cast your votes. Then next week, we'll move to resorts and Disney Springs with a new ballot. Then every week after that, as things combine and the field whittles its way down to a champ. So starting off in the parks division, the number one overall seed takes us to Hollywood Studios, where you can hop in a car and have a milkshake at the Sci-Fi Drive-In Theater. Sci-Fi will take on the number 8 seed from Magic Kingdom, the Lady and the Tramp-inspired Tony's Town Square. Number 2 in parks, and I thought this might be the number 1 seed, but it's not. It's number 2. That goes to Le Cellier, the steakhouse in the Canada Pavilion in Epcot. It also gets an Italian food adversary in Round 1, matching up against Mama Melrose's over at Hollywood Studios. Your number 3 seed is also at Hollywood Studios. Keep your elbows off the table if you don't want to get scolded at the 50s Primetime Cafe. This is also a Studios versus Magic Kingdom contest, as the other side is the number 6 seed, the Liberty Tree Tavern. Finally, it's slightly more exotic fare in the 4-5 game, as we get Animal Kingdom's Yak and Yeti taking on the Jungle Navigation Company Limited Skipper Canteen over at Magic Kingdom. Now, if you don't have time for sit-down dining because the standby line for Haunted Mansion is only 25 minutes and you better get in it, then you're going to need a quick service meal. First, I just need to state for the record, I'm quite disappointed by the poor showing from the Boardwalk Pizza window, which didn't even make the tournament. Instead, your top spot went to Woody's Lunchbox at Hollywood Studios. I do love their grilled cheese. And it's going to take on Dole Whip Central, Aloha Isle, over at Magic Kingdom in Adventureland. Also, if anybody happens to be near Aloha Isle, go ahead and pick up the Dole Whip I accidentally mobile ordered there last year, thinking I was getting it at the place at the Polynesian. Whoops. Moving along. Number 2 in quick service is another favorite of mine. That is Pecos Bill's Tall Tale Inn and Cafe at the Magic Kingdom. Tough opening game, though, as Pecos Bill is going to have to deal with Sam Eagle. The Regal Eagle Smokehouse at Epcot is the number 7 seed, so that's a tough one there. The 3-6 game is a Magic Kingdom special, as Sunny Eclipse tries to lead Cosmic Rays Starlight Cafe to victory over number 6 Casey's Corner. And then it's all Animal Kingdom in our last match, with the number 4 Satouli Canteen taking on the number 5 Flame Tree Barbecue. Tough call in that one. That's going to be the full ballot for this week. Then the other half of the field joins the action next week. In the Disney Springs zone, we'll have the top-seeded Boathouse against number 8 Raglan Road. Number 2 Chef Art Smith's Homecoming takes on the Earl of Sandwich at number 7. The number 3 Polite Pig meets number 6 Haleo. And finally, we'll have number 4 Splitsville against number 5 Morimoto Asia. Finally, we've got the resorts region, where a huge fan push made Ohana at the Polynesian number 1 seed. It takes on number 8 Chef Mickey's from the Contemporary. Then another Contemporary restaurant falls in at number 2 with the Majestic California Grill, which will play against the ketchup of the Whispering Canyon Cafe over at Wilderness Lodge at number 7. The number 3 resort seed is another Contemporary entry, Steakhouse 71, which competes against the fine dining of Topolino's Terrace atop the Riviera. And finally, and I think underseeded at number 4, we've got Beaches and Cream at the Beach Club, squaring off with number 5, Boma Flavors of Africa at Animal Kingdom Lodge. That's it, the field of 32 in the Tournament of Disney Dining. Voting is open in the parks and quick service first rounds, so make your voice known. Also, be sure to leave your email address at the bottom of the ballot, then we can notify you of round-by-round results and give you links to vote in the next rounds. It's the Tournament of Disney Dining here on Not Your Mother's Goose. Chow down and get those votes in. There was an old lady who swallowed a fly. A lot of my friends and family members are doctors. Good ones. Surely that makes my parents proud when they hear me out here telling finely crafted Rumpelstiltskin jokes. Really making something of myself. But I really need to check in with these doctor people about their recommendations if you swallow a fly, because I'm thinking that the medical research may have diverged over the years since this song was recorded. And since there is nothing like taking a tongue-in-cheek piece of writing and analyzing it literally, we better have a serious talk about this. Back in the day, if you were riding along on your bike, mouth hanging open like Lance Armstrong, and in goes a mosquito, apparently what you wanted to do was keep riding until you plow through a spider web too. The plan, I guess, was to have the spider then rebuild that web in your esophagus, catch the fly, and solve your problem. I do not see any flaws in this plan whatsoever. Alas, if you know the old lady from the song, you're aware that we haven't reached the end of the story. Just like Alias probably should have ended after season 2, our gutsy granny soldiers on to round 3, where she swallows a bird to catch the spider. I mean, okay, you might have gone Ozzy Osbourne style and tried a bat, but I guess you're still in the right general predator-prey neighborhood here. Though we are getting rather close to the realm of the guy called the Regurgitator I saw at a show in college. He would swallow pool balls and light bulbs and then cough them back up. He could have really helped out here, because it seems like a cat would be right in his wheelhouse. And imagine that, she swallowed a cat, is your next verse. Bring him in, you fix your problems. We're still not done, though. Since a loose cat in your intestines apparently calls for swallowing a dog, then the lady swallows a goat to catch the dog. Seems to me the goat would be more useful if she had previously swallowed a tin can, or if she was one of those people that gets on the last 5 minutes of the evening news on a Thursday because they spent 10 years eating a Cessna plane. Actually, that guy's real. I looked him up. Apparently, he did it in 2 years, and after rereading his story, this whole lady swallowing a goat and a cow thing, that really doesn't seem like too big of a deal. Regardless, unlike Captain Digestaplane, things don't end well for our elderly friend. After letting a full New York strip steak on the loose, she swallows a horse and then croaks. I just hope that the listed cause of death is food poisoning. Dance crazes. Since we're on a Christmas theme, a while back I was working with the Wilson Pickett song Land of 10,000 Dances trying to create a Christmas version for Rapunzel's Jukebox. That remains a work in progress, but while I was doing it, I realized that I don't have any idea what half of the dance crazes mentioned in that song are. We're not going to focus on any of these recent things. We're not doing the Cupid Shuffle, the Macarena, we're not going to do the Dougie, or anything else done after about 1980. What I want to find out about is the old dances, and we're going to learn them together right now. I'm just going to work through this, we'll see what we get. I think we can probably skip over the twist, since most of us do know that one, but I want to tell you that Wikipedia offers a full paragraph describing how to maneuver your hips back and forth and notes that, quote, occasionally one leg is lifted off the floor for styling. Okay then. I will give Chubby Checker some credit here, though. This guy managed to turn the twist into so many rehashed songs that it'd make the folks at the Fast and the Furious proud. I count four different twist tunes from 1961 to 1963 alone, and that doesn't even include the twist Tokyo Drift. But let's move on and try some others. For instance, when I'm teaching my junior golfers and they can't get their footwork right, I often ask if they're doing the Watusi, despite not having any idea what the Watusi is. So let's look that up. Okay, relying on Wikipedia's description, this thing sounds about as rigid as the Oompa Loompa dance from Willy Wonka. But if you go over to YouTube, you get multiple different stories. One is pretty much tiptoe central, and that would work well either at a gospel revival or some sort of event where you had to navigate your way across hot coals barefoot. But then I've found a group video, and this one is like 25% square dance, 25% the twist, and then 50% throwing elbows like Dennis Rodman rebounding. Like I said, neither of those match the Wikipedia description, so we're just going to have to acknowledge that our understanding of the Watusi is pretty obtusy at this stage of the game. Let's try the mashed potato, then. What is that? All right, apparently we can thank James Brown for this one, and it's pretty much just heels in, heels out, sometimes with a leg out. It's more or less an ants in your pants style dance, as far as I can tell. I'll also report that I just learned that the original version of the locomotion apparently didn't involve just running around your middle school cafeteria in a train that was a conga line in disguise. Speaking of conga lines, I just watched the bunny hop being done in a conga line. That looks like enough fun that you could be convinced to try it before your fifth drink of the night. However, a second video that I found of a man in a suit demoing the bunny hop solo while some other guy plays the song on a saxophone, that one was definitely filmed somewhere very close to an open bar, and you're going to want to watch it. I have to tell you that writing this whole segment has not panned out the way I expected. I thought I was going to watch videos of these dances, describe them sarcastically, and totally ignore how dumb I would look trying to do these moves. What I didn't anticipate was the hilarity of trying to read the straight-laced internet instructions on how to do the dances. Now, thankfully, there aren't any instructions in the article on grinding, though it does have an article, but see if this would be sufficient to help you learn how to do the sprinkler. If you're familiar with a sprinkler, then you know what it is. If you don't, see if this would be enough of a description for you to do it. Standing with legs slightly apart and knees slightly bent, the dancer then bends their left elbow to enable them to place their left hand behind their head. They then outstretch their right arm in line with their right shoulder, hand flat, in a vertical position. The dancer then rotates around the waist in a 180-degree sweep, pulling back three times as you move your arm to the left, and then in one motion swing right arm back to the right. The move is then repeated. The dancer may then swap arms and reverse the move. There is then, believe it or not, to do the sprinkler, footnotes. And I do hope if you click on them, it says, just don't do this with a hose. Now that you're all danced out, and I hope not calling your friendly neighborhood physical therapist, it's time to put a bow on this episode of Not Your Mother's Goose and send you to the polls. I seriously debated writing a 2022 Not Your Mother's Goose holiday gift guide, where Jack would be recommending hedge clippers for beanstalks and Pinocchio offering big and tall giant handkerchiefs for oversized noses. I think I could actually use one of those, but that's going to wait for another day. I did, though, find this letter to Santa I thought I should read to you. Dear Santa, I just wanted to remind you that I have been very good this year, but I definitely do not need an ice cube maker, air conditioner, snow cone machine, icicle lights for the castle, or another snow globe. It's not funny anymore. If you're really hung up on that theme, I'd settle for hockey skates. Sincerely, Elsa. Good luck with that, my friend. As we bring things to a close, let me remind you to go to notyourmothersgoose.com so you can vote in the Tournament of Disney Dining, and then keep checking back every week for more. It's Parks and Quick Service this week, then Resorts and Disney Springs next week, then everyone in action in the Scrumptious 16 the week after that. I'll be back January 10th to announce the Edible 8, or maybe the 8 You 8. I don't know, we'll come up with something. And then it'll take three more weeks to get us down to a champion. Thank you for voting. Thanks once again to Adam Vibber, both for the idea for the tournament and for lending his voice to Maui on Manners. Have a wonderful Christmas and holiday season. I'm Topher Goggin and the goose is loose. We'll see you in 2023 on Not Your Mother's Goose.